Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Finish up projects with GE-branded silicone sealants. Tub and tile silicone is 100% waterproof and offers same-day water readiness, making it perfect to use in kitchens and bathrooms. Shop our selection of GE sealants in-store and on Menards.com and save big. Plus, check out the weekly flyer to view all of our other great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
Welcome to The Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome in to another episode of The Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by RotoBaller. This is episode 325. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80 grade co-host coming to you live from the sunny state of Florida, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how's it going, bud?
It's good. I'm just pretty tired at this point. Been a long day. The stupid internet outages are still affecting flights. Had two delayed flights, but I made it in time for the noon game at least, and then which was the target. Made it to Bradenton about 30 minutes before the first game, and then hit another night game tonight in Dunedin, so I'm ready to crash. This will be the first night in 2 months that I'll be able to sleep straight through the night. If you don't know, I've had a baby, so a two-month-old baby, so I'm going to sleep really good tonight, and I'm pretty excited about that.
Yeah, you definitely got to take those little wins when you get them. You get a chance to have a full night's sleep. Oh, it is like a godsend. It really is. I remember those days, so definitely enjoy that tonight. I remember those days. Good times, though. A lot of fun things to talk about today. Good mix of players. Some major leaguers, some minor leaguers. We got three up, three down with pitching prospects today. Some recent debuts. Some minor league promotions from level to level. An older player that's hot again. Should we care? So, again, good mix. We'll get into that in a second here. Before we do, the usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter. Chris is at RotoClegg. I am at EricCross04. Show is at ToolShedPod. If you enjoy the pod, please rate and review. Make sure to check out both of our personal platforms, thedynastydugout.com and ToolShedFantasy.com for more work from each of us, including our FYPD rankings. We both got our initial rankings up on each of our personal sites, so check those out. And, of course, check out all the great things going on over at RotoBaller. Still cranking on a ton of fantasy baseball content. Plenty of fantasy football content as well, plus many other sports. Use that code TOOLSHED at checkout. Get you 10% off any premium package over at rotoballer.com. So let's start off with MLB promotions here. We got two of them, Jacob Wilson and Nacho Alvarez. I'll start with Jacob Wilson, who unfortunately is already hurting on the IL with a hamstring strain, so that didn't really last long, but I figure we talk about him nonetheless. Only had 46 games in AAA this year. Technically, 46 games total. 22 AA, 19 AAA. And he had some rehab assignment games at the complex. But overall, in those 46 games, 438, 475, 687 slash line, 7 home runs, 12 walks, 13 strikeouts, and 25 doubles in 46 games. I think he was tied. I remember I tweeted this out like a week or two ago. He was tied for third and doubles in minor leagues, and you need to play like 44 games at that point, which is absolutely insane. But obviously, Chris, people know the story with Wilson, you know, elite contact abilities. He's hitting 401 in 72 career minor league games, But the question is, what does he provide outside of power? Luis Arraez is an easy comp to make here. Do you think we see any power from Wilson? And is he a guy you'd be looking to target? Obviously, take away the injuries long-term. Is he a guy you'd be looking to invest in?
I don't know. I think that it depends on the format. I think Wilson certainly plays better in a points league format, given that he gets on base a ton and makes a ton of contact. It's an interesting profile because you look at it and you say, okay, 6'3", 190. Like, I think that, yeah, there could be some projection there for him to add some power, but so far we haven't seen that. You know, he's 22 years old, so it's not, there's time. It's not like he's old, but also you want to see some of that power coming about. And I know it's easy to look at and say, oh yeah, we hit 7 home runs in, you know, 183 plate appearances. You extrapolate that, and that's okay. That's 21 homers over 600 plate appearance sample. But yeah, I think that there's some issues when we look under the hood a little bit. It's obviously the EVs aren't very good. He hits the ball on the ground quite often. The contact is elite of elite. Like, it's like the most elite contact in minor league baseball right now. You think about what he's done so far, and in AAA, it was a 97.4% contact, 98.9% in zone. It's just stupid. Like, he makes contact on literally everything. He's pretty aggressive, actually. There's Chase is a little higher. Chase is probably like league average, 31%, swing rate of 50%. Like, it's a pretty aggressive hitter, but he hits everything. He puts the bat on every pitch. The EVs are bottom of the barrel. It was an 84 mile an hour average EV this year. You look at the profile, and I think that, man, can he lift the ball enough at ideal angles to get away with some of those kind of lower exit velocities? And I don't know. He does pull the ball, which is good. Like, the pull rate's pretty high, which I can get behind. But we need to see some more fly balls, the problem. The fly ball rate's relatively low. So I'm split. I think that probably the best time to sell Wilson was the day he got called up. Now, obviously, can't do anything with him, which kind of stinks, but you're stuck on him. I think that it's a points league play for roto leagues. Like, if you like a Luis Arraez, obviously, I think you should probably like Jacob Wilson too.
Yeah, it just really depends how much you like this profile. I don't usually go after the minimal power guys, you know, unless they have like big speed, which Wilson doesn't have either. He'll probably hit more home runs than he'll steal bases in the major leagues. But luckily, Oakland's probably going to more hitter-friendly parks moving forward here, so that could help him. And then you mentioned, like, he puts the bat on the ball, so he might just run into 7, 8, 9 just because he puts the bat on the ball so much, but and the good pull rate as well. But I don't know, I think best case scenario, we're talking like 12, 13, 14, like literally if everything breaks right, he gets to that 12 to 15 range, which I don't think is out of the question. If he's 6, 7, 8 home runs and similar stolen 4, 5 stolen bases, I don't know how much value that provides. Like, I don't think I've ever rostered Luis Arraez in any format, redraft, dynasty, whatever. Probably never will. So I don't see myself rostering Wilson. Again, it's kind of format dependent, but you know, if you want that high average, great. He's going to really help you out there and have a probably maybe score a decent amount of runs. They're going to hit him near the top of the order pretty consistently, but you know, that's really all you're going to get from him. You can't get more than 12 to 15 home runs at most. You're probably not getting more than 8 to 10 steals at best case scenario. But yeah, you mentioned the contact approach and the approach are elite. Only 3 hitters with 200 plate appearances have a better swing strike rate in the minor leagues. And that's Chandler Simpson, Chase Meidroth, and Turner Hill. Because Wilson has a 3.4% swing strike rate, which is just ridiculous. So yeah, if you like that profile, great, but just really just capped with the offensive upside there, just given the minimal power speed blend. But the other prospect here getting the call, unfortunately, because Chris, what's going on with your Atlanta Braves? Is everyone just getting hurt? Ozzie goes on the IL. They bring in Whit Merrifield. He was already getting hurt, taking grounders. Just some warm-ups. The initial move when Ozzie hit the IL was to bring up Nacho Alvarez, or depending on what platform you play on, he meant to look up Ignacio Alvarez. But Nacho Alvarez here, 21-year-old infield prospect, for the Atlanta Braves, fifth rounder back in 2022 out of Riverside City College. Good story if you ever want to look into it. But last year had a little mini breakout of sorts, 284, 395, 391 slash, 7 home runs, 16 steals. This year in 76 games, 7 home runs and 21 steals, nearly as many walks as strikeouts, and a 293, 401, 417 slash. But Chris, another hitter, a little bit different than Wilson, but similar in the regard of, all right, you probably get a solid average, solid OBP. Like, he's a good hitter, but just what do you get outside of that? What are you thinking here with Nacho Alvarez? What's the upside long term?
That's a boring profile. I think that it's important to note that the Braves minor league parks are very pitcher friendly. And it showed. You look and, oh, he didn't hit a home run in Double A, but then he goes to Triple A and he hits 7 across 28 games. Like, what happened? Mississippi's a notorious pitcher's park. So that's obviously pretty notable. It's an interesting body. I've seen Alvarez a good bit. And it's not like a speed profile. I know you look and there's stolen bases there. He's already stolen 21 this year. And it's a good reason that minor league stolen bases are completely irrelevant because just if you want to go watch some minor league catching, it'll tell you everything you need to know for the most part. But I think Alvarez kind of profiles as like a 10 home run, 10 stolen base type. And I know people are going to be like, look at the power in AAA, because people have. They're like, the power's legit, but is it really? It's not all that dissimilar from Jacob Wilson. It was an 87-mile-an-hour average EV in AAA. So that's a 3-mile-an-hour jump from Wilson's, and it was a 101.5 ninth percentile, so a little bit above, but similar max EVs, similar launch angles, but it's obviously not the contact those, but still really good contact. You look at what Nacho did this year at both stops, and the contact skills were really good in Double and Triple A. And so I think that's what you're going to get. He's going to get a profile that puts a lot of balls in play. He can take a walk. He knows the zone well, and he's going to get to some home runs every now and then. I wouldn't count on much speed against major league catching, but I do think it's a solid profile, but it's not one I'm like running to get. The only benefit is that he's in a good lineup, but the Braves lineup hadn't been all that good this year. So I don't know. I think there's going to be some struggles initially, probably out of the gate, because it's just such a different ball game. And it's a big jump from AAA to the majors. And talking to somebody that's only had 28 games in AAA so far.
Yeah, I definitely wouldn't read much into those 21 steals. Look how many good catchers there are at holding base runners and throwing out guys in the major league level. And then imagine what it is in the minor league level. So, yeah, I guess when I wrote him up over on my Patreon, I was like, yeah, he could hit 270, solid average, probably maybe a 10-plus guy. Probably never gets, maybe he has one season when he gets up in the 15, 20 home runs, but I just don't see a lot of power speed. As you mentioned, boring profile, but can he be a solid hitter? Absolutely. So if you're okay with him, a little bit of a higher floor, not an immensely high floor, but decent floor, not so decent ceiling. Maybe he gets some run here, given all the injuries. And with Ozzy out now, he gets some run in that infield. And it's not like Braves have been lighting it up, like you mentioned. The middle of the pack offense this year, they're trying anything they can right now to get that spark. We'll see, but probably get some decent run here, and maybe it can be a deep league asset. But like, I don't think he's ever going to be like a top 100 fantasy player or anything like that. But next one's here, getting promoted from low A to high A, a couple of Detroit Tiger prospects, Kevin McGonigal and Max Clark, both definitely deserve the promotion. Clark, the number 3 overall pick last year, was slashing 286, 386, 421 in 73 games with Lakeland. 11 doubles, 7 home runs, 26 steals, only caught twice, 48 walks to 58 strikeouts. McGonigal, the 37th pick last year, so Detroit did pretty damn good with their first couple of picks there. McGonigal in 60 games with Lakeland, 326, 407, 470, 15 doubles, 4 home runs, 20 steals, only caught 2 times as well, 35 walks to 24 strikeouts, and 53 to 34 overall in 81 games in his minor league career so far. Both getting on base, both hitting for average, both stealing some bags, waiting for the power to come with both these guys. Max Clark has obviously been the bigger name, Chris. Obviously, he was the top five overall pick, had all of that buzz, highly ranked in FYPD rankings, and rightfully so. McGonagall, I think, is starting to become really undervalued. Like, I put out a poll from the Toolshed account earlier today, and I knew Max Clark would win the poll. I said, which one are you higher on long-term? I thought it'd be a little closer than it was. Currently 82% to Clark to 17.8% for McGonagall. I thought maybe more like 65, 35 or something like that. And I would take Clark as well, and I have him ranked higher, but I think McGonagall is really slept on. There's a lot of good skills here, you know, good bat the ball skills, obviously phenomenal approach, above average runner. And I think there's sneaky power to get up to 15, 18 home runs as well. So I think both are good targets right now, and McGonagall especially, because the price tag is still pretty, not low, but not as high as it should be, because that perceived value is still pretty much in check.
It's a bit surprising that the poll looked like that, honestly. Right. Clark's been good, but Clark's not without flaw. Yeah, Clark makes good contact, but McGonagall makes elite contact. They're not all that dissimilar, unless you want to just talk projection. The bodies are completely different as far as size and projection on it. But McGonagall makes the better contact. McGonagall actually has hit the ball harder so far this year. I think you look at McGonagall's swing and it's a little more conducive for loft. And I think that's been Max Clark's kind of like fatal flaw so far, is that it's a really high ground ball rate. It's a swing that's not conducive to lift. And he's got a decent pull rate. It's a 44% pull rate. It's fine, but he goes oppo a lot. He's not, you know, hitting up the middle and pulling like you'd want to see. And he's especially not lifting to the pull side. Now, you look at Max Clark's frame. He's listed 6 foot 205. He looks like he still has some projection. Like when you say 6 foot 205, I say, okay, like it's, there's not much there, but he looks to me like he still could add to it. McGonagall, on the other hand, is listed 5'10, 187. McGonagall's, in my opinion, seeing him is much shorter than that, but you take it for what it's worth, the list height, whatever it is, go by it. McGonagall pulls the ball like crazy. It's a very high pull rate, and he hits the ball in the air much more often. He's doing a much better job lifting to the pull side. And so effectively, you know, I'm not saying he's going to get to more home runs than Clark is, because I think that the power for both is right now, I think, a little below average. Like, I'm not projecting Clark for, you know, above average to plus power right now. I think that right now, to me, it looks like Clark probably is going to have below average power. And McGonagall, like, I'm not going to project above average power on him either, but consistently he has hit the ball harder and in much better launch angles. And I'll take that when you make the kind of contact that McGonagall does. I mean, 89% overall, 94.5% end zone, like, those numbers are going to play. And while Clark's are still, the contact is still really good for Max Clark, it's still 80% and 90% end zone. So very good, but McGonagall's been elite in that department. So I want to take my chances there, see where it goes. I was hoping to see both this week, but they both got promoted, so I won't see them this week. But then again, I'm excited for both of them to see what they can do in high A. I think it'll be a good challenge for both, but the contact skills give them such a high floor.
Yeah, it's funny how close they are. Like, looking at the profiles right now, even though, yeah, you look at them and they look different just on the baseball field. And obviously, I think Clark gets the nod for most people because of that projection that you mentioned, Chris, where it's like that what if factor. What if he grows into above average raw power, which I think is still possible. We'll see. It's still a couple years away from being a finished product, so to speak. But yeah, I think McGonagall is very undervalued. Maybe if he had more than, what is it, 4 home runs this year. Four home runs in 60 games. I think that's what's keeping his value in check. People are like, oh yeah, he's hitting .326, he's stolen 20 bags, more walks than Ks, but that power is like that real, I think maybe the most sexy tool for a prospect, and doesn't really have a lot of that right now in terms of in-game power. But yeah, I think he's going to end up being that mid-teens, you know, 14 to 17 range home run guy, 20 plus steals and a high average in OBP. And maybe he won't be 25-25 or anything like that, but I think he's going to be a well-rounded offensive player. I still lean Clark right now, like I mentioned, but I think McGonagall is a phenomenal target. And he's still only 19 years old as well. So I would definitely go out there and try to get McGonagall. I think that perceived value is only going to go up from here. Next up here, we got A big major league outing the other day for Hayden Birdsong going into Colorado. Colorado offense in general isn't great, but they actually have been hitting better of the last several weeks. And it was in Colorado, goes in, strikes out 12 in six innings, allows two runs, and tied Dylan Cease for the most whiffs in an outing this year with 27. That was really impressive, and just your fifth major league start here. Overall, in five starts, 3.55 ERA, 25 and a third innings. He's at 28.3% strikeout rate, 11.3% walk rate, and a 1.22 whip. Obviously, a lot of that came down in the last game here against Colorado. What are your thoughts, Chris, on Birdsong long term? I feel like long term, he's going to be pretty similar value wise to like a Kyle Harrison. Both have their, you know, hitters, they've shown that. Both had pretty solid minor league careers. Walk rate can be a little high for both of them, though it has come down for Harrison in the major league level, but both can be inconsistent arms that flash. They flash, like they look like it could be a number two starter at the major league level, but then the inconsistencies come for each of them. So I feel like they're pretty similar long term here, but what are your thoughts on Mr. Hayden Birdsong?
Yeah, obviously that start was stellar to do what he did, and the Rockies are the Rockies. Even at home, the Rockies are still going to Rocky. And you look at Birdsong, and I think that the fastball is just located extremely well. He relies heavily on it, and he locates it well up in the zone. It's 95, 96, and it plays. He mixes in pretty consistently the slider, curve, and change, which is good. Throws them to both hands. I like seeing these throwing the change up to in on righties too. And it's getting whiffs. And we're talking small samples here, but we're looking at really solid secondary whiff rates right now. Do those stick? Probably not. But you look at the movement profile on his pitches and change up, it's hard to pick up. And so he's able to get batters with that late kind of vertical movement. It's got 11 inches of horizontal as well. The slider's got really good depth to it. And that certainly affects hitters. And then he drops in the curveball on you with 50-plus inches of horizontal break. With horizontal, that'd be crazy. 52 inches of vertical break. Imagine a sweeper going 50 inches. Don't think that's possible, physics, but...
You just broke the laws of physics there, Chris.
Yeah, completely. But yeah, I think that Birdsong is interesting. I think that maybe we shouldn't have the kind of expectation that he continues to do what he did, obviously, because... You look at the starts prior to that, and it was like five strikeouts, 12 Rockies. But I think that he can be good. I think that you're looking at probably like a SP4 type long term, and that's fine. Like, I think that plays good home ballpark too, which only helps him in San Francisco. I like the profile enough to buy in.
Who would you rather have long term, him or Kyle Harrison?
That's a good question. I think that you could make an argument that I think most people just assume that Harrison has like the much better stuff, but I actually don't really believe that and haven't believed that for a little while. He doesn't miss a ton of bats. He misses bats with the slurve, and it's about it. The four-seam changeup, they're okay. And his slider, slurvy, whatever you want to call it, it's solid. But I might lean Birdsong having a little bit better stuff and being able to miss more bats. Also, you kind of factor in that the command can get spotty at times for Harrison, and I think that I might lean Birdsong.
Yeah, no, I can definitely see that. I think he has a more well-rounded arsenal. So, you know, I might lean. I've said that they're pretty close long-term. I think that they're both like top 75-ish arms, solid arms. So no one you're going to build your fantasy rotation around. But yeah, I might lean Birdsong as well. I think there's a little more bat missing ability, and again, a more well-rounded arsenal. So yeah, I guess I'll lean Birdsong as well. All right, going to the AL Central now. Byron Buxton is on fire. Two more home runs yesterday. Has 8 in his last 25 starts, slashing 378, 426, 755. This is dating back to June 11th. Also has 11 doubles over that time frame. But should we care? I think that's not the greatest way of wording it, but we've seen Buxton do this before. People are like, yeah, I've seen so many people saying on Twitter, oh, he's back. Like, back to what? Like, what are you getting back to? Because we've seen this time and time again where the both in terms of production and durability, it never lasts. I mean, what's he have? How many years over 500 plate appearances? One, and it was 2017, which feels like a lifetime ago, 3 years before the pandemic. It's just so long ago at this point. He hasn't played over 100 games since then. His highest games played and plate appearance season was 2022 since that 2017 season. And he was at 92 games and 382 play appearances. He's averaging about half a season played, if that, since that 2017 season. And we've seen the average fluctuate a ton. He hit 207 last year, 224 year before that. K rates were above 30% each of the last 2 years. That has dropped down to 25.9 this year. So that's nice to see. Quality of contact is still pretty good. And but the walk rate has dropped from 10.1 to 4.7% this year. Still below average contact rate guy as well. So I would, if you can, and people want to buy in that he's back, maybe someone in your league probably thinks that he's back. So I would definitely try to use this as a selling opportunity here, because again, I just can't see both the production and durability sticking moving forward, even over the rest of this season, let alone 2025 and beyond. I think I have a better chance of winning the lottery or something like that than that for Buxton. So yeah, easy sell right now for me. But what do you think, Chris?
I can't find anything that's different in the profile. That's really the thing. It's like you look at everything and it lines up to last year. And obviously last year wasn't good. The year before that wasn't good. So in that sense, I'm not like going out to get them, because it's like, what improved? Like zone contact rates worse than last year. The overall contact rates worse than last year. He's a little more aggressive early in counts. So I guess that's okay. He's getting better pitches to hit. So you can take that. He's chasing way more. The exit velocity data, all pretty similar to last year. He's barreling the ball a lot less because he's hitting the ball on the ground more, which is, you know, something to watch. He actually, I don't know. It's an interesting profile to look at and try to figure out what exactly is he doing and is it sustainable? I don't think so, because I think he's going to get hurt again, honestly. And that's my biggest fear. Yeah, the strikeout rate's been cut, but I think that's just a natural cause when you're swinging more early in counts. He's also not walking at all. So I'm not like super in. I don't see a reason to go pay up for him. I guess at this point, he's probably rostered everywhere. And I'm not like going out and trying to trade for him, because I think he's back. I think his value's peaked, and maybe you sell. Like, what would you sell him for? If you had him, what would you try to get?
It's a good question. If I can get, would you sell him for like a top 30, 40 prospect?
Maybe, depending on what your window is. I think that, yeah, I wouldn't be opposed to that.
I know how I value him, but it's just hard to think about how the general consensus value sometimes this is like a number ranking or tier ranking for dynasty rankings. You think, what do you think his general consensus are on Buxton, Chris? Like top 200 dynasty, top 150, somewhere in that range?
Yeah, I mean, I would think so. I think he's probably, for some people, probably pushing like top 150. Not for me, but
yeah, not,
I think
not
that he
either.
Could be there for some people.
I'm pretty sure I have him. I don't know if my rank is up right now, but I'd be willing to guess I probably have him in like the 225 range, give or take a little bit either way. Obviously, he has the upside to be top 100 or better. We've seen that. Power has always been elite. That's always been a constant with him, but I just can't invest in a guy that has played, I think, under 50% of his team's games since he debuted. It's just not good. And again, the average is more bad than good. Doesn't really run at all anymore, even though still obviously a phenomenal athlete, but stolen bases on, he's got a five this year. So he's still giving you some here and there, but not as much as we hoped he would, given his 97th percentile sprint speed. So yeah, if I had him, maybe I'd try to see if I can sell right now. These other two guys, both struggling in AAA, both struggled in the major leagues, and that's why they're back down in AAA. Figured it was time for a little bit of a check-in here with Jordan Walker and Spencer Torkelson. Let's see, look over. Torkelson's really been struggling in AAA. You look over the last 19 games dating back to the later part of June. Strikeout rate is approaching 40% for Torkelson. He's only got two home runs over that span. This is the 19 games, 183, 322, 296 slash line with 32 strikeouts in 19 games. And if you take it back a little bit further here, and if you go back five more days, he has a bunch of more multi-strikeout games. He has 41 strikeouts in his last 24 games for AAA Toledo. And it wasn't like he was – he had a little bit of a hot stretch when he went down there. But outside of that, it's been pretty bad for Spencer Torkelson. And then Jordan Walker, it hasn't been, like, terrible lately. He's just been consistently underwhelming in AAA. He's been there for 61 games now this season after, you know, 20 games with St. Louis earlier in the season. Slashing 238, 304, 363 with just four home runs, 15 doubles, which is solid. And not striking out. That's not an issue for him right now. Only 49 strikeouts. So the K rate is under 20%. For Jordan Walker right now, the issue with separate issues here with Walker is simply just hitting the ball on the ground way too often, which has been an issue for a couple of years now, and that's a hard issue to correct. And then Torkelson, he's starting to get a little bit of a strikeout issue here, which wasn't a big issue for him with Detroit, but he has become one here, and just making contact has been an issue for Tork. So separate issues, both talented guys, we know that. Do you have any faith in either of them moving forward, Chris? I think it's way too early to write them off. Torek's 24, almost 25, and Walker is still barely 22. He turned 22 back in late May, so too early to say write them off, so to speak, but I don't know. Do you have any faith in either of them to become impactful fantasy bats?
I wonder how much of the struggle is mental at this point for both of them, just a complete loss of confidence that's destroyed them both, and I think that could be a huge factor here. For Torque, him going to AAA should have been a huge reset for him to be able to just get that confidence back that he had lost at the major league level. But it's honestly gotten worse. I didn't expect that he would struggle like this in AAA. And you know, he's still not making contact. And the quality of pitching that you're facing in AAA is just honestly not good. Running is still a sub 70% contact rate in AAA is really concerning to me. Yeah, there's some good zone contact at 80% and the chase rate's really low, but I'm pretty worried about what I've seen from Torque since being demoted. And Walker, golly, like the upside is there. This is still a young kid with just turned 22 in May. So he's still young. He's got all the athleticism in the world for a big frame. Like, he moves extremely well for that frame that he has. I think that when do they pull the plug on the outfield experiment? Like, I think that he's struggling with that, if we're being honest. And that certainly weighs on you too when you're trying to figure it out in the field. And then you also aren't hitting. So that's obviously a big concern too. And yeah, I think that you have to be a bit concerned with the ground ball rate, the launch angle here, because Walker's still hitting the ball hard. Like, you look at the underlying data in AAA, and it's good. 91 mile an hour average EV and near 107, 90th percentile. Like, those are both really good marks, but it doesn't matter because he's hitting the ball on the ground too much, and the launch angles just aren't ideal. It's either on the ground or there's a lot of pop-ups too, like just not healthy fly balls, which is a bit concerning. So, yeah, I think certainly something is going on here. Could be mental lack of confidence kind of thing. And both of them just need that spark to get back going. But I'd be lying if I was said I was not concerned about both of them. And I don't know which one I'd rather try to buy on at this point. I really don't know.
I think I'm not like rushing out to get either one of them at this point. I think I still have a little more confidence in Jordan Walker because, you know, he's not striking out, though he's going to need to overhaul that swing and to really unlock. So we've seen he has big time raw power. We've seen that. I was there at that two home run game he had spring training last year down in Florida where his ADP went through the roof. But I don't know. Torque is just outside of that 2 month stretch late last year where I think he had like 15, 16 home runs in 2 months. He's been a very mediocre hitter for the last couple of years, including in time in the high minor. The average just has not been that good above high A. So I just have questions about his ability to hit more than 230 long term, especially if this newfound strikeout rise is here to stay and becoming a new issue for him to work on. I think I'd rather lean into buying Jordan Walker. And I'm not even opposed to that because I think the price tag has dropped a ton on both these guys, but I'd rather go after Walker personally. I'm not out on Torque, but I've never been the highest on Torque, even when he was going well. So I'm staying away there. I'm holding out a little bit of hope for him, but staying away for now. All right, let's get into three up, three down with pitching prospects this week. Very National League Central heavy. Five of the six are National League Central, starting with Bubba Chandler of the Pittsburgh Pirates. Hey, another really good pitching prospect from the Pirates org. You look at over the last, all these stats will reference and three up, three down for pitchers over the last 30 days. You know, 10 days is really two, maybe one or two starts. So looking at a little bit of a bigger sample size here, the last 30 days for Bubba Chandler, where he's really just been lights out in 28 and a third innings and five starts, only allowed five runs, 11 hits, five walks, 33 strikeouts. That's a 1.59 ERA and a 0.56 whip. And for the season, 3.67 ERA for AA Altoona, 1.03 whip, 80 strikeouts to 25 walks in 68 and two thirds innings. 21 years old, Chris, third round pick in 2021. And I got that, you know, he's never had the gaudy minor league numbers, but he's done a much better job at limiting walks this year. That was a little bit of an issue for him last year. Walk rate was a little bit on the higher side, not terrible though. So dropping the walk rate has been encouraging this year, and just has really good stuff. He can miss bats with the best of them, and I think he's maybe not this year, but maybe joins Skeens and Jones and Mitch Keller, form a really good foursome there in Pittsburgh. And I think he's a great buy right now. And you've been beating the drum for Chandler for a bit now. I think at this point, he absolutely has to be either in people's top 10 pitching prospect rankings or at least in that discussion.
Yeah, I think that he's certainly there. It's seeing him a couple times last year when he was in Greensboro was just electric. And even when he was bad, like the stuff was still there. And one of my more embarrassing moments was he was starting and there was a scout from a West Coast team and I was chatting with him and he'd never seen Chandler. I was like, get ready. It's electric. And Chandler struggled with command. It was a bumpy start. I don't remember what kind of box score he put up, but like the stuff, even when he's bad, is still really good. Fastball is consistently 97, 98, and it's elite ride through the zone and it's good horizontal. The changeup and slider are deadly. You're looking at like 18 inches both ways. So like the slider with like up to 18 inches of sweep and the changeup with 18 inches of fade. It's just so hard for hitters to pick up. And you know, I think that really the biggest question was how would the command translate? And the strike throwing has improved significantly. And even over his most recent start, he did walk three batters. And that was on Sunday. Three walks, which he had not allowed. You had to go back to May. So since the start of June, he had walked a total of three batters entering that start on Sunday. So a small blemish, but I think major strides that we had seen. The fact that he had thrown as much as he had and not walked any batter. Also, I'm going to chalk a little bit of this up for him being rusty. The way the schedule lined up was just weird. He was a two-start that July 4th week, which was a funky week anyway, because they played on Monday and then they played through Saturday. Most teams did. So he made two starts out, but he only threw two innings the second half. So he went 7 2/3 that start on July the 3rd. And then he threw two innings because just workload management. But then the way the All-Star break lined up, he did not pitch again. So we're looking at 12 days off. So you could spend some rust in there. But at the end of the day, I think Chandler's made enough strides. And with the stuff, I really do think it's elite. I just believe that this is one of the best arsenals in the minors. and he's really athletic on the mound. He's a good mover. And if the strike throwing sticks, then yeah, you're going to look at somebody that steps in this rotation with Skeens and Jared Jones and Mitch Keller. And this kid is as good as any of them. I'm not saying he's going to be Skeens or Jones, but the talent level is there. The Arsenal is that good.
Yeah, no, absolutely he is. And so he's pitched much better than, you know, you look at last year, 4.54 ERA. Even this year, 3.67 doesn't really stand out, but definitely pitched better than that and has all the upside in the world where, you know, he finishes the season strong. I think he's going to be a universal top 10 pitching prospect and maybe even flirting with the top five. Obviously, Skeens is the stud and Jones. I'm not saying it's a direct comp, but it's kind of more similar path to Jones where he wasn't regarded as like an elite pitching prospect until kind of more closer to his debut when he got up there and was considered a top 10 pitching prospect by a lot of people. But I'm guessing what we're looking at here with Bubba Chandler, and I think upside is a number two starter if everything clicks, and he won't need to be. Skeens is the number one there. You got Keller and Jones kind of 2-3 spots. So we can step in into that four spot, lower, you know, expectations, won't have to go against the other team's best guys for the most part. Yeah, I think it's a very good situation here for Bubba Chandler. And Pittsburgh's going to have a really good rotation over the next few years. See if they can figure out things on the hitting side, which has not been that great outside of, you know, O'Neill Cruz and Brian Reynolds. But yeah, Chandler definitely one to get and probably still can get him for a price tag that's not close to top 10 pitching prospect price tag. First down here, we're going to Cincinnati with Chase Petty, who's coming off a good year in 2023. ERA 1.72 and 18 starts. Now, most of those were at high eight Dayton. And then there was a lot of hype this offseason that, oh, his velocity's back to where it was a couple of years ago. You know, there's a lot of excitement around that. This has not translated into the season. Looking at a 5.04 ERA, though it's funny, he's 7-2. That's why win-loss records are crap for pitchers, especially pitching prospects. 7-2 with a 5.04 ERA. That's funny. But a 1.54 whip as well. And the strikeouts just haven't been great. Looking at a 21.1% strikeout rate right now. Walk rate's gone up from last year. It's currently at 10.6% after being at 5.5%, so nearly doubled the walk rate this year. And then over the last 30 days, hence why he's being talked about here as a down, looking at a 4.50 ERA, 1.59 whip, which not terrible 4.50 ERA, but 17 walks in his last 22 innings. So really struggling with locating and throwing strikes right now. Petty, Chris, obviously he's a fun arm. I think there's no doubting that, but it just hasn't come together yet for him. And he's still pretty young, but I guess what are your thoughts here on this profile moving forward?
It's just really interesting because he's been like a different type of arm every like year of his career. I remember when he got drafted, like it was super electric stuff, and it was like, where's the command going to be? He added that, you know, nasty changeup and paired with that sweeper, like coming into his second year in 2022. And it's okay, like the strikeouts weren't really there, and the command improved, like the velo dialed way back. But then it was like, there's, you know, it was just confusing on what he was. Then he comes out this spring, and he was up to 100, and it was like super electric again. Like everybody was calling for a breakout, including myself. I really thought that he could, you know, piece it all together. But
yeah, me too.
He's not missing bats right now. I think that's a concerning aspect. It's like, and he hasn't missed bats consistently for his career at this point. So like the stuff's great, but does it really matter if you're not missing the bats? So I don't know. I think it's a little bit concerning because, especially the fact that he's pitching in the Southern League right now. And the Southern League has been very pitcher friendly this year. The hitting environment in the Southern League is so much worse than any other minor league. I guess what I'm saying is right now, it's really interesting. Obviously, last year they did the tacky ball. I don't think that's going on right now, but the run environment is way down compared to most every other league. I don't know. It's something interesting to just look at. And the fact that I feel like Petty's stuff should allow him to miss bats it's a little bit more concerning. I don't put a lot of stock in the ERA for minor leagues, but I'd like to see him miss some bats. I'd like to see him be able to throw some more strikes and just find some identity at this point. Who is Chase Petty? Because he's evolved like three times at this point, and I would really want to show us who he is.
Yeah, will the real Chase Petty please stand up? Because I think many people want to know who is the real Chase Petty. And he's got a 23% strikeout rate for his career in the minor leagues, over 251 and two-thirds innings, and dating back to 2021, or more so 2022. He had five innings in 2021, but he's been around for a little bit now, but he's still, you know, 21 years old, but he's been a mediocre K-rate arm. I'm still holding out hope. He's shown that he can get that velocity. The stuff has been, you know, pretty good, but it has not translated. So I don't know. I'm still holding on a little bit of hope here. I'm not going to drop him like terribly far down my rankings, but he has been consistently sliding in my rankings, so to speak. But the next up here, going back to Pittsburgh, you know, he sends a trend here with Thomas Harrington, 23-year-old right-hander, was the 36th overall pick out of Campbell University back in the 2022 draft. You know, this year has been pretty damn good in 12 starts, 2.33 ERA, and a whip under one, 72 strikeouts to just 9 walks. And then if you look at over the last 30 days, 31 innings, only 6 runs allowed, 6 walks to 36 strikeouts, so 1.74 ERA and a 0.94 whip. Then you look at for the season, only walking 3.5% of batters while striking out 28.2% of batters. So 25%, so a little under 25% K minus walk rate. Chris, he doesn't quite have the upside of Chandler, but hey, if Harrington kind of comes that five to go along with the other four that we just mentioned a few minutes ago, I think he'd be a very good five. He kind of profiles as like a SP4, a high end four, maybe a back end three, best case scenario, but it's a definite starter's profile. Three average to above average offerings, really good plus or better command and control as well. So he's going to be that guy that is a stabilizer and doesn't really have a lot of blow up outings, which is what he's done in his minor league career. 3.12 ERA and only walked, I think, 9 this year. The drop in walk rate was already pretty good last year, but he's taken it to that next level so far this year. So really high floor guy, solid stuff. And yeah, I think he's another guy that I've even been guilty of undervaluing and underranking, but not anymore. I think he's a legit arm and a legit major league arm at that.
Yeah, and I think it's underrated that he came back from a shoulder injury and is pitching this good.
Yeah,
he is. The fastball's ticked up too, and I think that's worth noting that he's averaging closer to 94, 95 this year, and that's pretty notable in comparison to previously. He would range from 91 to 94. But with Harrington, you get a really good changeup. Could be a plus changeup. The slider, he spins it extremely well. And I just look at this profile. The changeup plays really well off the fastball. When he throws that slider, spins it, he's missing a ton of bats. The command control is plus or better. We talk about Zebby Matthews' strike rates. Thomas Harrington's right there with him. When we look at those numbers of 69.5% strike rate is one of the best marks in the minors. So it shows obviously in the fact that he doesn't walk anybody. And I think that's pretty substantial. And he's only gotten better. Again, he was coming back from a shoulder injury this year. And you look at how the year's going, he didn't make his first start until May the 7th. So he was a little behind. But he's been dominant, and I don't know there's any other way to put it. His last two starts have been 7 innings, 11 Ks, and then 6 innings and 10 K. He's only walked 2 batters over that span. I just think that Thomas Harrington is really legit. I think he's underrated. I think that this is an easy top 100 prospect at this point, and I think that Pittsburgh, again, is underrated. Their pitch development's really good, and everybody hasn't bought into that. I've been saying that for 2 years and no one seems to be bought in, but Pittsburgh's pitch development in the minor league levels is incredible. And Harrington was a good pitcher coming out. Like, Harrington's always been a good arm, but he has taken some massive steps forward this year.
And it's, I think people are starting to give Pittsburgh their due, but still not as much as they should. But I think it's surprising that they aren't, people, the general consensus isn't giving Pittsburgh as much love as it should for their pitching development. When you look at, maybe Paul Skeens would have been Paul Skeens regardless of where he went, but kind of what they did with Jared Jones, with Harrington, with Bubba Chandler, yeah, it hasn't gone well for really like Salameto, but for the most part, they've hit on a lot of pitching prospects lately. And I think once you get Harrington up, once you get Chandler up, both are probably up by the All-Star break next year. I think you'll really see, look at all this homegrown pitching talent here. So, yeah, Pittsburgh is definitely an org that is doing well on that side for sure. Keeping it in the NL Central again for our second down. Now, this guy tactically, maybe I think he has exhausted. Yeah, he has, but his prospect status, but in the minor leagues right now and pitching terribly, is Aaron Ashby. Still only 26 years old. I thought he was a little bit older than that, honestly, but he has been absolutely, I don't want to say garbage, but he's been pitching like garbage since he had that one start with Milwaukee, and he allowed 2 earned runs in 5 innings back on June 5th, and got sent back down to AAA Nashville. And since then, in 7 starts, 29 innings, 38 hits, 35 runs, 33 of those earned, 27 walks, and 31 strikeouts. This is for a walk rate 17.4% and strikeout rate of 20% in those 7 starts. And this kind of a little, you know, sidebar here. Now, this kind of shows perfect example of why strikeout rate, K percentage, so much better than K per 9. You look at, oh, he's got over a strikeout per inning. It's 31 Ks and 29 innings. Yeah, but that's a 20% strikeout rate, which is below average. So you definitely use K percentage. It's much more indicative of a pitcher's ability to miss bats. And so in 10.24 ERA to go along with that. WHIP is over 2 in that time frame and a 3.07 batting average against. He's not giving up a lot of extra base hits, only 2 home runs allowed. Actually, the ISO is 0.96, but when hitters are getting on base at a 4.42 clip off of you, it's going to be hard to keep those ratios in check. And obviously, he's flashed good stuff. He was a guy that had a good combination of bat-missing ability a couple years ago for all the injuries. You know, bat missing ability, the higher ground ball rate, the Milwaukee pitching factory. So there's a lot of things going for him. He was a very desirable target in dynasty leagues, but not anymore. And I don't think people have realized how bad he's been. And it wasn't like he was pitching well before he got that one start with Milwaukee. Yeah, he had 2 starts that were good leading up to that, but overall, you know, he's been pretty bad the entire season. Overall, he's a 7.97 ERA in 81 and a third innings this year with 72 walks and 79 strikeouts. There's a big issue here with Aaron Ashby. Strike rate under 60%. I'm pretty out on Ashby right now, but do you see any hope here with Ashby, Chris?
No. I think that the days of him having any chance to be a major league starter are gone at this point. And it starts with the fastball. When back in 2022, he was sitting 96, and now it sits 93. That's a substantial drop off. We're talking 3 miles an hour down, and the pitch shape a little different, certainly not as good as it was. And the slider used to be a big swing and miss pitch, and that was his go-to whiff pitch. And in the majors in 2022, that pitch had a 40%+ whiff rate, which pretty solid, and it set around 84 and now sits 81. So it's really interesting. He still misses some bats with it in AAA, but again, that slider should miss bats, but you know, the rest of the profile is just command. And it's just, I would assume that Ashby's probably not rostered in most leagues, but if he is, I just don't see a reason to have much any hope on him, even in a deep league. Like, I'd rather take my chances somewhere else than here, because it looks really lost, sadly, at this point, because the upside was there. I'm not so sure coming back from injury, this is the same guy.
Yeah, you mentioned he's not the same guy he was. Like back when he had all that hype around him a few years ago, like that's a completely different arm from what we're looking at now. And the fact that he can't really miss a ton as many bats as he did a few years ago, the walk rate is just absolutely terrible. Hitters are making so much contact off of him. It's just, I'm pretty out at this point. I don't really see any reason to invest, but hey, it's not all bad in the Milwaukee org right now, because Jacob Mizorowski is pitching much better of late. Over his last five starts here, dating back to June 19th, 26 and a third innings, 1.71 ERA, 38 strikeouts, but more importantly, like the most important thing here, only seven walks. So he's faced 100 batters in his last five starts, so 7% walk rates on the nose here. And looking at in his first 12 starts this season, which is why, you know, I don't think fading was the right word, but I was, you know, dropping him a little bit down my rankings, because he had 34 walks in his first 46 and a third innings, and that equates to a 16.1% walk rate. So to cut it in half over his last five starts, more than half, is very encouraging. And obviously, Mizorowski has the upside of a frontline starter. You know, if we're ranking on pure upside, he'd be a top 550 prospect, no questions asked, and all the upside in the world. But that kind of command and control profile was holding me back a little bit here. I know, Chris, do you think, how much confidence do you have that what we've seen from Mizorowski over the last month or so is something that we can really have faith in moving forward?
Yeah, it's so interesting because he had really struggled, like, substantially with strike throwing. And then all of a sudden it was like, okay, like, it's improving. It's good to see. And he's really just taking steps forward. And it looks like at this point, like, over the last month, the strike rate's actually been better than the league average, which is crazy. I didn't think that he would get there. Obviously, the stuff is incredible when he misses a ton of bats. And since June 19th, when he began to go on this stretch, he's got a 19% swinging strike rate, which is wild, walking to 7% of batters with a 38% K rate. Like, those numbers will play. And, you know, I don't think anybody's ever questioned how good Jacob Mizorowski's stuff is. You know, it's a easy plus fastball slider, if not 70 on the fastball slider. It's just, is the command good enough to play as a starter, at least? And I think that he's made strides to prove that, yeah, it can. And he's had back-to-back 10 strikeout outings, one earned run in the last two starts, which is 12 and a third, and just four walks over that span. So you take that, and I think the Mizorowski maybe turned a corner, but I would like to see a little bit more before I'm super confident in this profile, because I was ready to drop him. Not drop him, but drop him in the rankings just based on where the walks were and where the strike rate was. It was a little bit concerning to me, but I really think that he's made some strides where I feel a little bit better about the profile now.
Yeah, and even if he settles into the 10-ish percent walk rate range, which obviously isn't great, but with his stuff, like, you can live with that. Like, that's kind of like the Freddy Peralta rule. If you got really good stuff, you can kind of live in that 9-10% walk rate range. Yeah, if that's what we're looking at with Mizorowski, I'm definitely in. If it's 7-8%, I'm 100% in. But that's what I questioned leading up to the last month or so, and looking at the walk rates and strike rates was legit. So yeah, definitely encouraged. But yeah, hopefully we'll see how he finishes up the season. But if this is a trend for the next, you know, month and a half or whatever leading up to the end of the minor league season, yeah, I think I'll definitely be buying what we're seeing from him lately for sure. Last down here, our only non-NL Central prospect, Robbie Snelling. We talked about him in this 3-up-3-down several episodes ago, but it's just not getting any better for Snelling here. Over the last month, he's given up 18 runs in 16 and a third innings. That's his last four starts. 26 hits allowed as well, and seven home runs in 16 and a third innings. So last month, 9.92 ERA, 1.96 whip for the season in 15 starts, 6.14 ERA, 1.64 whip. Walk rates ticked up a little bit. K rate, he's below 20% K rate right now. It wasn't like great last year, but he's around 25%. Yeah, and obviously had a sub 2 ERA and was rising up to being a top 10, even top 5. Pitching prospect for some people, but this hasn't followed up with the same amount of success this season. Chris, he's still very young, though. We're talking about a 20-year-old. He'll be 20 for the entire year, won't turn 21 until, you know, a week before Christmas, and in Double A. So he's still very young for the level he's at, and coming off what we saw from him last year, I'm not ready to say, oh, last year was a fluke or anything like that, but it's definitely been discouraging to see Stanley take a step back this year. But do you think he can get it back on track and kind of regain his elite pitching prospect status?
I do think that Snelling can rebound, and one of the younger pitchers in Double A right now. And I still believe in the talent level here with Snelling. And obviously, like, you look at the results and it's okay, this is really bad. I do think that we have to point out that the fastball, you know, wasn't great last year. He got by with some other pitches that he made work, but now that he's up in Double A, it's certainly, you know, now more exposed, I guess I'll say. And I think that, yeah, it's been quite, I always question the velo, at least. Could he get enough velo to work? It was always low 90s. He actually has regressed this year. He's lost a tick or two on the fastball. And it's always been about, like, the location of it last year. And when you're not locating it super well and you lose a tick on it, then it's going to struggle. You know, I think the changeup has been, you know, good. It's has the upside, but he has still had inconsistencies with it this year because the fastball hasn't been great to play off of it. You look at the slider, it's a upper 70s, low 80s type pitch, and it has potential to miss bats too, but it hasn't. Now, I do think that Snelling can bounce back and be fine. I'm not, like, super out here. I do think it is concerning that, you know, the swing strike rates aren't good, and really they weren't that good last year either, but he still had good strikeout numbers. And then you look and the walk rates haven't been great either. Now, really the biggest thing has been a home run problem, which, again, Texas League, the ball is going to fly. When your velos tick back and the location's not perfect, yeah, the ball's going to fly out of the park. And Snelling had a 5 home run game, which kind of hurt. And even the most recent start, it was 2 home runs and 4 1/3 with 3 earned runs allowed. Still, back-to-back 7 strikeout outings is encouraging, especially after coming off 2 straight with just 1 strikeout. So I think that it's just finding the footing and confidence again. It's getting that, you know, fastball velo back up a little bit. And if Snelling does that, then I think he'll be fine.
Yeah, I'm still fairly in on Snelling. Maybe we did go a little bit too high on him, and I'm definitely guilty of that as well, fully admit it. And I think I had him as high as, I think, my number 5 pitching prospect, maybe even number 4. He was definitely in that range. Didn't get top 3, but it's either 4th or 5th kind of in my pitching prospect rankings where he peaked last year and really entering this year. But he's not this bad. And like we both of us mentioned, he's very young for the level, still has solid stuff. Maybe he's more of a mid-rotation arm moving long-term as opposed to a frontline guy. Doesn't have the upside of a Mizorowski or a Bubba Chandler even, but that's something that there's a pretty solid arm there. You know, given the very bloated surface stats right now, the ERA and whip, I think you can use that to your advantage and maybe get him for pretty cheap. I mean, it'd be a low risk and potentially high reward investment if he does bounce back. Even if it's not bouncing back to 2023, even if he bounces back to where he's capable of bouncing back to, I think you'll be happy with that for sure. But that is going to wrap us up. Thanks to everyone for tuning in again this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. We will be back with you again in a couple of days. But until then, everyone take care.
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Finish up projects with GE-branded silicone sealants. Tub and tile silicone is 100% waterproof and offers same-day water readiness, making it perfect to use in kitchens and bathrooms. Shop our selection of GE sealants in-store and on Menards.com and save big. Plus, check out the weekly flyer to view all of our other great deals happening this week. Save big.